What's going on with Earl Ingram? You want to know? Dr. Jonathan Kumar, a pulmonologist with Frater in the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, joins Earl Ingram to talk about emphysema and BLVR. What causes emphysema? What is BLVR? And how can this new groundbreaking procedure cure people like you and me? This is more than just a conversation. This is life-changing information, something you don't want to miss. And it's airing this week on all streaming platforms. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcasts. And please remember to please like, share, and subscribe to find more content. Stay tuned.
It is with a great deal of excitement that I bring my next guest in this continuing, ongoing podcast, What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I'm excited to bring Dr. Jonathan Kerman, a pulmonologist with Frater and the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we want to talk a little bit today about emphysema and BLVR. Good morning to you, doctor. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, Earl. Thank you so much for having me.
I just want people to know that this is, we're just going to wet your palate this morning for a few minutes, but we're going to reschedule and go into even more depth of what this really is, what a pulmonologist is, and certainly what we're going to be talking about today. So let's talk a little bit about emphysema and what that entails.
Sure. Thank you so much, Earl. Emphysema is one of the forms of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. This is a condition that affects millions and millions of people around the world, including here in the United States. It's predominantly caused by smoking, but there are some hereditary causes as well, such as alpha-1 antitrypsin disease. When you smoke, that causes destruction of the normal little air sacs in the lungs called the alveoli. So instead of having millions of alveoli in your lungs, you only have maybe several thousand larger air sacs, and that causes decreased respiratory efficiency, meaning your breathing is not as effective, and so you're more short of breath when you do even basic activities like getting dressed or walking a short distance on level ground.
You know, you talked about smoking. Is it, and that's clearly one of the main ways you can contract COPD, but what about being exposed to carcinogens in the workplace and those kinds of things?
Even if you don't smoke, you can certainly develop chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, particularly from secondhand smoke, if the exposure is significant enough. Carcinogens in the workplace can increase your risk of developing cancer, but it typically is not directly associated with development of COPD.
So what's the difference between COPD and emphysema?
Emphysema is simply one of the forms of COPD. So with under the COPD umbrella, you have two different forms, emphysema and chronic bronchitis. It's kind of like saying cars as a general category, and then with under that cars category, you have several different brands. They're all types of cars.
So what are the different treatments when we're talking about this? It's clearly a serious, serious issue. Is it life-threatening?
People who have severe COPD have a greatly diminished quality of life because they can't breathe well. So they're always short of breath, even with minimal exertion, very minimal activity. And there is an increased mortality rate as well. If you have advanced COPD, you will die sooner than somebody who is healthier. Historically, we've been reliant upon inhalers, oxygen, pulmonary rehab, things like that to improve somebody's COPD management. Now, however, there is a newer technique, something called bronchoscopic lung volume reduction, which we abbreviate BLVR, that involves a 30-minute procedure that's done with you asleep all through the mouth with a tiny camera. There's no cutting involved. And what this accomplishes is it reduces how much your lungs are overinflated by the emphysema. And when you do that, your respiratory mechanics become much more efficient so that when you exert yourself, you feel much less short of breath. So when you walk up a flight of stairs or carry your groceries in, you're not gasping for air like you were before.
Before we get into the inner workings of that surgery, one additional question. So COPD, does it affect you when you're sleeping? Does it, cause shortness of breath when you're sleeping?
Most people don't have significant symptoms when they are sleeping. It's more when they are trying to do any type of physical activity, even something like playing with their grandkids or walking around the grocery store.
Well, you know, is it something that as we age, let's say we smoke, and quit 20 years ago, is there any reversing of that? Or does it stay with you your entire life?
Unfortunately, the lungs do not heal. Once you have inflicted damage upon them by smoking, that damage is irreversible. So no, it doesn't heal up. It doesn't get better. And everyone's lung function declines as they age. I'm a never smoker, and my lung function is going to decline slowly as I get older. But in somebody that smokes or has smoked in the past, you've just accelerated the rate of decline. So your lungs will get worse faster.
So when we're talking about smoking, it used to be, I'm 71 years old, so I can recall the time that when they talked about smoking, they really talked about cigarette and tobacco. But what about those who, bygone days smoke pipes? Those who smoke a lot of marijuana today at very young ages, those who smoke cigars, smoking period, or is it the type of smoking that you're doing?
I think smoking in general is not good for your lungs. We have the most data on cigarette smoking, because that's been the most prevalent form of smoking historically. But all of these other forms are probably contributing to some damage to your lungs. So I would recommend not inhaling anything except for oxygen into your lungs.
So let's talk a little bit about the surgery, BLVR. And is this something that's it's new on the market? Is it something that doctors and insurance companies are readily willing to take on since it's very new? Are insurance companies saying yes to it?
So it was actually approved by the FDA in this country back in 2018. So it's about 7 years old at this point. And it was incorporated into the COPD management guidelines back in 2020. So it's been part of our guidelines and standard of care for 5 years. Despite that, there's been a bit of a slow uptake in the medical community just because we've been managing COPD using inhalers and oxygen kind of the same way for decades and decades. And so it's hard to keep up with all of the new options that are out there. But more and more patients are becoming aware of it. More and more physicians are becoming aware of it. And it's through that awareness that patients are being evaluated at an increasing frequency. Many patients who are evaluated for it will qualify for the procedure, which I just want to be clear, is not a surgery. There's no cutting involved. It's all done with a little tiny camera through the mouth while you're completely asleep. We watch you in the hospital for a couple of days afterwards to make sure you're doing okay. And then once you go home, there are no restrictions. You can go back to your normal life.
So you said a couple days. So after the procedure, you remain hospitalized for a couple days?
We do watch people in the hospital for at least 3 days afterwards. We want to make sure that they're doing okay and that they don't have any complications from the procedure. Even though it's minimally invasive, we're dealing with generally older individuals with unhealthy lungs to begin with. And so we want to make sure that everyone is doing okay before they go back home. And again, when they go back home, they have no restrictions. They're able to do whatever they want, eat whatever they want. The way that most people describe their degree of benefit after a procedure like this is they say, listen, I'm able to do stuff now that I haven't been able to do for 10 years because my breathing was so bad. So that's the goal. The goal is to turn back your respiratory clock about a decade. We don't always get there in every person. Some people don't respond quite as well as others, but that's the goal, and that's what's achievable in many cases.
You know, you already answered my next question. What is the rate of success and the percentage of success? And you just stated, you know, like anything, everybody is not the same. And so some people, this works. Other people, they don't. So is this something that doctors, I mean, I can go to a doctor and the doctor says to me, and a specialist, a pulmonary specialist, and they talk about the problems with my lungs and the inherent dangers, and the doctor then suggests this, or is it we're trying to make sure that patients are aware of it, and maybe patients can maybe, you know, talk with their doctors about possibly doing this?
In general, I think we just need to increase awareness around this procedure, especially because it is standard of care and guideline recommended. This is the one procedure I do where more patients are what we call self-referred as opposed to referred by their physician. Patients are suffering, they're at home, and they're largely incapacitated. They're not doing what they want to do because of their shortness of breath. And so they're going online, they're reading, they're listening to programs like this, and they're educating themselves. And by doing those things, they are increasing their knowledge, and then they can serve as their own advocates. They can present these other options to their healthcare provider, get an assessment from them. But many times, patients are just figuring out who offers this type of procedure, and then they are contacting that provider directly to undergo evaluation. When a patient calls up expressing interest in this, we will schedule their testing. That needs to be done in order to determine eligibility for it. And it's pretty simple stuff. Usually it's stuff that they've already had, honestly. Things like a CT scan of your chest, an ultrasound of your heart called an echocardiogram, and breathing tests, technically called pulmonary function testing. That's really it that you need to determine eligibility. And then once those have been obtained, they would see the provider, somebody like myself, in clinic. We would discuss the results and their eligibility and then schedule the procedure, which again only takes about 30 minutes and is minimally invasive.
So when you talk about minimally invasive, what is the process quickly?
The patient is completely asleep. They're under general anesthesia, so that way they don't feel anything. They don't remember anything. And then we have a little tiny camera. It's about the diameter of a pencil, actually. And that goes in the mouth, and then the mouth leads directly into the airways within the lungs. And then we go to the part of the lungs that is most destroyed by emphysema, and we deploy these little tiny valves. They're like little tiny devices that are about the size of your fingernail that are made out of a metal called nitinol and silicone. And they let air leave that part of the lung so that it deflates and it stops squishing the healthier part of the lung next to it.
You know, doctor, I can't wait until we're able to drill down even deeper. The more, you know, we have these conversations, the more I realize that the human body, the things that we take for granted, you know, they're so complicated and so complex. And unless we have dialogues and conversations with you and others like you from Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin, you know, the more we can have these kind of conversations, the more we can realize that, hey, our bodies are more than just a garbage bin, and that, you know, we can extend our lives and the quality of our lives by understanding the inner workings of our system. Is it safe to say that, sir?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Earl. For our patients and for all patients out there, I think the primary message that I want to leave them with is, if you have COPD or emphysema and you're on inhalers and you're still having shortness of breath, even if it's just when you're walking or doing activities, think about asking your doctor for evaluation for this type of procedure. It can really have a big impact on your quality of life.
I want to thank you very much. It's very, very important information that you have disseminated this morning. We're going to be looking forward to an extended conversation with you in the very near future. Thank you very much from the depths of our heart. We really appreciate it.
You are very welcome, sir. Have a great day.
You as well.